Welcome to the first off-season edition of the Original 11, the official podcast of Princeton football. My name is Craig Sachs, and it's been a couple months since just an incredible 2018 season. I hope people are still, enjoying the memories of Princeton's first perfect season since 1964 and that incredible Ivy League championship run. Good to catch up with Coach Cerace for about 20 minutes of some around the program topics. Obviously, a lot of attention over the last 2 weeks with the move by Sean Gleason from Princeton to Oklahoma State. Obviously, we touch on that. And then, the move of Andy Orich to offensive coordinator. But I also thought it was a good time to catch up on a few other things that happened in January. The East-West Shrine game that Coach Cerace was able to attend. The IFA dinner that honored Jason Garrett. And then, maybe take a quick look, an early peek at a couple of positions that I think people will be interested in the spring and then obviously in the fall. So it was good to catch up. He's not around much over these, December, January, February, while the recruiting trail is pretty hot. But, I was able to catch up with him for a few minutes this week and just enjoyed this conversation. So here is Coach Cerace a couple months after that Ivy championship season, already looking ahead to 2019. So Bob, it's been a couple months since the last time we talked, obviously at the end of an incredible 2018 season. A lot that's gone on over the last 2 months when you start preparing for 2019 and then other things, but obviously Princeton football, got in the a little national attention over the last week due to the move from Sean Gleason, from your offensive coordinator to Oklahoma State. Can you just kind of talk about that process when you? And I know that Sean was somewhat coveted by a few programs. How that all kind of transpired?
Yeah, and you have a good feel for when guys are ready, and they're ready to reach their next step, their goals. I was thinking about it a couple weekends ago. Had a little bit of free time in between some recruiting things. We haven't lost a whole lot of coaches here, but to see James Perry reach a huge goal, it's hard to become a head coach when you're an assistant in the college level. He was one of two that year in all of FCS football. To see five guys now go to the NFL and have NFL aspirations, and some of them, like Ryan Roeder, are still in the National Football League. That's Jimmy Salgado, still in the National Football League. That's great for Princeton football. And Sean, when we sat down and we talk about next steps and how I can help and how we can better develop in that way, Sean wanted to be an FBS coordinator, and particularly a Power 5 one. And what do we have to do and how he can take those steps. And when we have the two seasons we've had under him and the offense we've had for really the last 7 years, he's going to be coveted. And I felt like every week during recruiting, I was getting a call from a nationally recognizable coach that had interest. And to be frank, a lot of them weren't the right fit for Sean. He said no more than one time, that it wasn't the right fit. And, he's at a place where you're in the Big 12. They score points. They're going to continue to score points. The head coach, he's going to learn from. They're going to do some things a little differently in some ways. And, he'll be able to share those things with us. That'll help us get better. And I got a great staff and a guy in Andy Orich that he's ready for the next step. And you don't want guys to get stale. So it's a win-win that we're going to watch Sean go on to Oklahoma State and root for him and watch him do a great job. And in the same respects, you get to promote a guy who is absolutely ready and been ready for this next step in his career.
When you go back 2 years where, this same thing happened with James leaving following the 2016 season, and Sean had that spring and summer, what are the things that a coordinator, a new coordinator, really needs to do in the spring and summer? Because kind of like Sean, you know, and he's been part of this offense. He's been part of the offense longer, so it's not like he needs to learn terms or players. But what are the important things for Andy to accomplish over the next 6 months?
Yeah, Andy's so organized, you know, very similar to Sean that way. He's very creative and thoughtful, very similar to James that way. The hard thing, and the thing we really work with when we had change at the coordinator positions in different years, when Jim Salgado took it over with Verbs, now when we went to Sean, we do more things where it's not scripted, right? We call that move the ball, where we're not writing it down on a script and just reading off a script, where you got to think through your call, and it becomes very game-like that way. And when you're in a staff meeting, Andy was putting, you know, he probably had more insight to the game plan than anybody, because as the offensive line coach, almost every run play was his idea. Same thing with Ed Morrissey when he was here, where a lot of people chime in on the pass plays. Everybody wants to throw in the pass plays that way. You know, where Sean and James, you know, when they were coordinators, had the biggest, you know, input on the pass plays. But, you know, Dennis and last year Rosie and Willis and Matunga, they all had a lot of input on the pass game. So Andy's always put the plays on the board and made suggestions and been outstanding in that. Now it's a matter of calling them and when to call them and the right time and getting a feel for that. So we'll do more move the ball during spring ball and even training camp.
You know, when you have an offense like you had, you have some players that get some a lot of recognition, and then their coaches do. And then on the defensive side, maybe not as much individual recognition, but if you look at the players that Mike Mendenhall coached, Jeremiah Tyler and Mike Wagner in particular, and the impact that those two guys had on the success this season, you know, I know you've been pleased with what Mike Mendenhall's been able to produce and the way he's coached for you.
Yeah, Mike's been tremendous. And you think about some of the guys that he's had. Mike Wagner was a high school quarterback, right? Wasn't a outside backer until midway through his freshman year. Anthony Siragusa played wide receiver as a freshman here. You know, those are the guys that had such great productivity for us on defense, and that Mike had a great influence on in their day-to-day. And he is, you know, such an intense coach and such a caring coach. And he combines those two things. Guys run through a wall for him. They love playing for him. He is dynamic. He's smart. He works hard. You know, it's everything you want. And he's very, you know, he's one of those guys, he's just honest and loyal and all those things that you want him on your side. You want this guy walking out of the tunnel as a Princeton Tiger helping lead us.
And so, you know, with the impending departure of Steve Thomas to the NFL, is this an opportunity for you to kind of give Mendenhall more responsibilities?
Yeah, and it's been great because Mike came to us. He was a special teams coordinator. And, you know, Steve Thomas did such a good job with that. And you know, he's going, you know, I coach, the guy he's going to be working with, I coached in college. And they're both engineers and college engineers. Like, I've been trying to, you know, arrange this marriage for a number of years. And, you know, Steve's been here 6 years with us. And, you know, to finally get this marriage arranged where he's going to work with somebody who I believe is brilliant, and it's going to allow Steve to grow and learn some new things is terrific. And in Mendy, we're going to get a guy who, both on the defensive side of the ball, has been outstanding, but is going to even add more on the special team side, because that was a big part of his background when he got here.
You can hit on 2019 in a bit. There were two things that happened in January that I wanted to touch on, both that you were there for. One was East-West Shrine Week. You know, it's doesn't happen very often for a Princeton player to get there, and Jesper did, and you saw some social media clips of great plays he made, both in practices and games. And I think you were there a day or two during the practice week. Just kind of your impressions of how Jesper looked compared to some of the elite seniors.
Yeah, I got in Monday night, and literally I walk in, and Mike Cerullo, our old operations director, he's running the show from an operations standpoint. I walk a few paces, I run into Phil Baia, our captain of our team and great leader and all Ivy safety. Walk a few more paces, and there's Jim Salgado. Jim's the coordinator of this team. and of the Jespers team. And he's a defensive back coach now with the Buffalo Bills. And I don't even make it to the end of the hall, and there's Luke Steckel, you know, who was captain of a championship team in 2006. I was like, is there anybody? I said to Cirillo, is there anybody not from Princeton here right now? And then I finally go up to my room, put my stuff away. I come back down, and I'm texting Jesper, hey, are you around? And here he is. There's like three scouts with him talking to him, and you can hear the Minnesota accent. It wasn't hard to miss him. And, you know, it's great. I think about every team interviewed him. He practiced. I saw practice the next day. He practiced outstanding. He was awesome. He won every one-on-one. He caught every ball. You know, when you say, does a guy fit in? This guy had a great week and, you know, dominated in the things he needed to do. His blocking was outstanding as well and did all the little things. And, you know, as he said, it's an adjustment. And, you know, some of the things he has to refine, he's working on before he goes and does his testing for the NFL scouts in the next month. But, man, it was so great to see a guy, you know, oh, he's not fast enough. He's not this. All he did was catch deep balls all week. So he's fast enough to beat, you know, guys who are supposed to be third-round picks. You know, it was great to watch that.
You know, you saw the deep ball in the game, but, you know, I thought what really caught me was it the practice that the catch he made in the end zone. And you think about the NFL and the importance of converting in the red zone and somebody that combines his physicality with his hands. I mean, his hands, I thought, were so underrated because you never saw him drop a ball, and you saw him make tough catches. I just think that combination is so valuable.
And he's got body control, and it's so rare. And I think baseball probably helped him with his body control and ability to contort his body and go up in the air and land and get both feet in. It was an NFL-type deal there. And get both feet in and score. That was just a true image of his athleticism and talent. He's so big. Like, he looks ginormous next to these you know, DBs that he was going up against, and you know, that was fun to see, and really, really happy for him and all the success he's going to have in his future playing professional football.
I know you had a great night in New York late January at the IFA dinner, and that's every 2 years a member of each program gets honored, and this year it was your teammate Jason Garrett. You know, saw plenty of kind of clips and stories about the night, but for you, it had to be really a thrill.
Yeah, it's awesome. And, you know, it's head coach of your team, right? You're a Cowboys fan. And I know, like, it's all about wins and losses. And when you win, you're fine. You lose, the coach stinks and all that. It's what we signed up for. But anybody who's seen him speak or heard him speak, I guess.
Incredible speaker.
You know he's motivating these guys. And he has a command of every room. Anytime I've ever been around him, he commands the room and as a leader should, as a general, as the guy in charge, he commands the room. And you could, this is the last guy speaking on a 4-hour event at the end of a night, and they're Ivy Leaguers, so they'd rather talk than listen. And I'm one of them, right? I'd rather be heard than, you know, listen to somebody else. And not a pin drop. Everybody listened to every word, and his message was absolutely the right message, and he always finds a way to do that. And, you know, what he's done as a player to play that long in the NFL, to win Super Bowls, and the contributions he made as a player, to do what he's doing, one of 32 NFL head coaches at the Pinnacle America's team, but to do the things he does and give back and make a difference. And that's where his teammates, me being one of them, why we come back every summer, to make a difference. And his foundation and what he and his wife Brill do with the Starfish Foundation, it just warms your heart that you're doing something great for other people to see them excel later in their lives.
All right, let's take a quick look. I mean, there's a lot of time, but let's take a quick look at 2019. And I guess, you know, so much of it starts right now with winter. And I know you talked about over the season the importance of the bubble and how it helped your guys. And there's not a whole lot you can do right now, but you must get a sense from either the guys or from your strength coaches how it's going, what the energy's like. So what do you know?
Yeah, I don't even ask. And literally, You know, I was in the bubble on Sunday. I had to go in there for a kid's thing. And, you know, we got a guy who sits in there all day and makes sure there's not anybody straggling in or whatever else. And the teams that are supposed to be or where they're supposed to be there, the rentals and all that. And the guy says to me, he goes, "You guys, your team's wearing this field out." And I was like, "I'm not supposed to hear this. It's a violation." But I walked with a big smile because you don't start where you left off. We're not 10-0 anymore. You start back at the beginning. And then, you know, one of our strength coaches who doesn't really know the rules, he's like, "You know, we had made 200 more open hour lifts, voluntary lifts, during finals as a team than we did the year before." And I'm like, "I'm not supposed to hear that, but you know what? You know, don't tell me it again. Like, that's, it's a rule, but doggone it, man. That's great to hear, because I don't keep track. Like, I don't ask for the numbers, I don't keep track, but you volunteer to win in how you work and how you do things, and the mindset our guys have and the culture they have, they know the challenges we face next year on our schedule. They know the challenges we face with some of these amazing players that are graduating. So we got to step up, and if we're going to be good, we got to step up and, you know, be successful."
Let's look at two positions I think people will be interested in. Defensively, you didn't have to watch very much to realize the impact that Mark Fassati and Tom Johnson made in those inside linebacker spots. James Johnson got a lot of time. John Orr got plenty of time, more time in 2017. Do you look at those two as, you know, kind of the leaders going forward, or do you feel like there's some young guys that can make make a move in the spring?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, you know, what I see out of those guys, and we just started workouts this week. We're going to be in the bubble, and the workouts we're allowed to be a part of. And my goodness, do those two guys lead? You know, Jimmy John and Johnny Orr. They're two of the best leaders we have, and I am so confident in them. And what you're watching is these young guys realizing that's what you got to do. So the competition's going to be great, but those two guys they get it. Like, that's the reason they, you know, we had five linebackers last year, two all Ivy guys and three studs behind them, and, you know, we got to get back to five. So I know in some role or another, these two guys are it. Like, who are the other guys? And we'll fight that part out.
Some people may listen to this and be like, "I wonder if he'll name his starting quarterback already." So I know they're going to be sadly disappointed that knowing you and knowing kind of how you're going to let this process develop, you know, there's a good chance that you don't know your starting quarterback until maybe a week or two before the first game of next year. What is it that you want to see in the spring from everybody who is it knowledge of the offense? Is it leadership? Is it how they're throwing? Is it accuracy? I'm sure it's a combination of each, but what are you looking for from the Kevin Davidsons and Zachary Kellers and Cole Smiths and Brevin Whites of the world?
Yeah, it's funny you used a word that we use all the time in Sixers land, process. And then you got to trust the process, you know, that way. And, you know, I'm not being joking on that. You know, it's the truth of that. You've been with me now, it's our 10th year together. I've never named a starting quarterback, right? I mean, I didn't name Quinn Epperly, or we never, like, John Lovett. I never named him the starting quarterback. He just was, you know, he's the guy. And through what he did. And, you know, I've probably had more discussions on that area because we got guys I just love what they're doing and what they did last year. And, you know, obviously we got to see Kevin start a game and play exceptionally well. We got to see, you know, Zach and Cole in the reps they had. You know, Zach didn't throw an incompletion, right? Cole dominated when he was in there. And I, you know, not many people, I got to see the JV games and some other things. And, you know, as I said to somebody recently, you know, I said to Chad Knopf, actually, and it broke his heart. I said, you know, Brevin had the best scout team year, you know, we've had, you know, in terms of that when he was down there. And, you know, Chad was like, "Better than me?"
Always the competitor.
I said, yeah, Chad. So it's gonna be fun to go through it. And part of it is they just got to compete. They can't be looking over their shoulder or wondering all those things. You know, it's gonna be a lot of different things you're evaluating, and you know, it's kind of, you know, I hate to use when the Supreme Court justice said, you know, how do you know?
Yeah.
You know, yep. Porn, you know, when you see it.
You know,
I know you want to, cut that, but
yeah. I'll leave it.
But what I was saying, Mark Shapiro was up here over the weekend. Mark is the president of the Toronto Blue Jays, good friend. He's on campus. We go to lunch, and I said to him, how do you guys know? Right? And it's a little different in baseball. It's an individual sport. They got simulations of every 21-year-old in single A, double A, triple A when they know when to promote. Football's a little different. He said that. And, you know, he said, you're going to know. Like, you'll know with your eyes. You've made the right decisions. And at the end of the day, you know, they're working their tails off. And they're going to work their tails off. And they're all going to get better because of it.
You know, I was talking to somebody the other day about this kind of this process, and it, what it reminds me of is, and I know this was before your time here, but the off season between 2004 and 2005, when, you know, Matt Verbit had been the starting quarterback here for 25 straight games, and there were 3 to 4 guys that, you know, kind of went into it with a chance, and you know, they all battled, and lo and behold, a guy named Jeff Terrell, a week or two before the season, you know, got picked, and he went 16-4. So I do think that the fact that everybody feels like they have a chance here motivates. It has to motivate them.
And they're all good, right? This isn't like we're picking from the scraps. These guys are really good. And in some cases, they might have started, you know, I played with a guy named Brian Barron, and Box Barron was, he's now the president, you know, or vice president of the Cleveland Indians. He was Jason Garrett's backup. He would have started 20 games, right, if Jason hadn't transferred back. He was probably the second best quarterback in the Ivy League those 2 years. Better than anybody else at any other team. He never saw the field because he was behind Jason Garrett, who was one of the all-time great Ivy League quarterbacks, right? Doesn't mean Brian Barron was a lesser quarterback. He just happened to be behind this guy. At the end of the day, these guys are really good. And
they've been behind the Ivy League Player of the Year for 3 straight years.
Yeah, and we're going to have to make a really tough decision, and that's what we have to do as coaches. And we got to put them in all the different, you know, situations to see it play out. I just love how they're working. I love how, you know, I see them lead. I've seen them lead. I've seen them not feel the pressure of, you know, trying to be the backup last year. I saw them last year as they were fighting to be the backup and how that went. And, man, I've seen the young guys grow. I've seen the older guys grow. And it is going to be fun, you know, in some ways. In some ways, it's going to be challenging. But competition's always good. And we're all going to get better because of it. And hopefully our team's better because of it.
Thank you for listening to this edition of The Original 11. Remember to check GoPrincetonTigers.com and follow PU Tiger Football on Twitter for more information as we head up to spring ball, and look forward to more podcasts over the spring and summer as we head into the 2019 football season.